Now, welcome to this evening's discussion. I have to say this evening, guys, because there's no more dusk. Dusk ended during the home run session. That was our dusk. Currently, we're finding ourselves now sundown. It's the sun has already set, so it's this evening. The nitty-gritty in terms of how the greeting works, don't worry, but we're here for a different discussion. We're here for the most important factor, which is talking about, well, the global dynamics with regards to the current discussion of the fuel price increases. Now, yesterday, as mentioned, here on the Home Run program, the most of the discussion that Franz had delved into with regards to the impacts and other elements with regards to how the fuel price increase will then permeate, influence, impact, and so further on influence daily life in the country. We all know that. I'm not going to repeat it. We all know that. But we're going to be touching on some of the crucial things, meaning we're going to take, we've already had the anecdote, us here in the country. We're going to elevate it up and see what the global dynamics have been looking like. Now, as we've known and as we've widely seen in terms of the publicity element with regards to one of the major drivers of the scenario of the global fuel price is the ongoing conflict. Now, you would ask me, how does it impact Dwight? How is the conflict still the main driver? Well, the main driver of the conflict is not the conflict itself. It is the perceptions, the sentiments, the political maneuverings, the political discussions, the global dynamics, the geopolitical, tensions that are continuously the main drivers for a lot of the speculators. And I'm gonna be bold and use this phrase during tonight's discussion, is the speculators. The speculators, the guys associated close to the OPEC Plus countries, the guys that have to sell off the various crude oil cargoes. Let me say cargoes of crude oil. It's those guys, the speculators, the traders in between. Now, I'm not going to put the names on them, even though I know who they are, because they have been identified on multiple occasions, who these speculators are. But I'm not going to identify them, because currently, said speculators are also one of the major headaches, even in another case study, which is the cost of living crisis that is happening in Europe, specifically in the UK. Now, guys, I will stay away from the UK. But one of the major drivers, before I get into the other nitty-gritties, just to give you some historical information, is that a lot of the EU members earlier today and yesterday had met in order to find out what can they do to de-link themselves from Russia, being dependent on Russian gas and Russian oil, because they are still buying Russian gas and Russian oil. They're still buying it. Now, the interesting thing is, when these EU members started meeting yesterday, when they just gathered to meet, already the pricing of the oil price per barrel had already started shifting. They just met to start the meeting. The oil price had already started moving. Later today, it had settled at $123 per barrel for crude oil. Per barrel. Now, what has been indicated is that this is the highest it has reached in a space of a month, meaning between March and now, this is the highest move. Two months. Between March and now, it has been the highest move that the price per barrel, per crude oil barrel, had moved. Now, we've got to factor in, guys, something else as well. And these are some of the other historical discussions. Because I'm moving now off that. These are some of the other discussions. Now, the other discussions occurred during the month of May. The other discussions had to do with the other oil producers that are not technically OPEC members. For example, like the US. Now, what happened is that Brent crude oil prices increased from $107 to $117. It went up by 9%. Whereas the West Texas Intermediate, known as the WTI, increased from 106 to 114. Now, if you're asking me, where does the West Texas Intermediate come in? The West Texas Intermediate, guys, is technically, I'll say this, it's technically the instances, and I'm also speaking under correction, they're actually the guys that were part of the fracking, you know, hydraulic fracturing, fracturing drilling, that instance. They were the guys that under Obama were sort of like, they set things in motion to not be dependent upon the OPEC Plus guys. Because OPEC Plus's scenario was because of the scenario of what happened in 2008-2009 with the financial crash. The oil prices also began to skyrocket. And at that stage, people were seeing it coming close to the $150 mark. And everyone was talking about, you know, it's too much. It's just going past the $100 mark was too much. And then when the US started tapping into their other reserves through fracking, they technically took themselves out of the demand cycle. Now, we've got to understand, they themselves only need to look after, they only look after their market. They only do that. So in essence, the current oil price moves is impacting everyone else who has to buy from the OPEC Plus cartel. I call them a cartel, ultimately because they decide on pricing. Well, they're not actually a cartel, because the word cartel is technically a very derogatory term. But that is what they do. It is what they are doing. You know, it is what they are doing. Even though they're an association, it is what they are doing. But here's the thing. In terms of taking that comparison in terms of Brent crude and the West Texas Intermediate, the West Texas went up by 8%. They went up by 8%. Now, their prices were above the Brent crude during 13 to 20 May alone, which was very rare. Now, you have to understand, this is to look after their internal market in the US. And in that same space earlier in the year, in Feb, just after the conflict broke out, Biden had announced that they have to release their strategic oil reserves. Now, releasing their strategic oil reserves is something like us establishing the sovereign wealth fund. It's a mechanism of stabilizing oil or petrol price moves. You know, to avoid it from rising too rapidly.
Kuningsa ozere nokusepika nompito domgara mokagura mkisgemeke ramangako wera o HIV ayo kupoperan tani kuirugana maokoko tokoras gara ninka bakurugana yowamba moktura moyo hundro yeyowamba zuma okoko ndimogwana koma pukuru komanzi tumako WhatsApp kono morozo yutantandatu zimwe ntatu yutantane mbali ntambali mbali ntane ndidingura ko Facebook ko VMMC Namibia.
Now, coming back and just where we ended off was that in terms of taking that discussion with regards to the West Texas Intermediate, it's safe to say, guys, that they had already made their moves. Now, I'm stressing these elements in terms of telling you that the rest of us are at the mercy of Brent crude oil prices and not West Texas intermediate prices, because technically, you know, most of the world buys from the OPEC Plus. Even the US buys from the OPEC Plus, but not as much as the rest of us, not as much as the rest of the world. Now, we've got to understand, guys. This is all about sort of like, you know, stock levels. If you have to talk about stock, you know, stock in a warehouse, stock in a shop, on a shelf. This is all about stock levels, how it's sometimes, you know, being singled out. Because if the US, and like what China also did, release strategic oil reserves or strategic fuel reserves. I can't say oil because it's already refined, but strategic fuel reserves. No, it is a mechanism, something or similar like what a sovereign wealth fund has to do. Sovereign wealth fund there to stabilize, you know, like foreign exchange moves and, you know, do certain stimulation activities in terms of a local market, for that matter. It's the same type of strategy. It's the same type of mechanism, just two different kinds of instruments that you're using. Now, alternatively, the US released these because they wanted to, you know, just soften the increases in terms of their fuel price increases. China did this in order to satisfy their fuel price increases and try to soften it as well. China even offered to sell to other countries because they themselves also have too much in their strategic reserves. Now, that knocks on to the next discussion, because for them, it was all about looking after their consumers within their country's borders. Within their country's borders. Now, this is where we find ourselves, guys, is a lot of the moves, a lot of the increases impacts everyone. It impacts everyone. And it's just to show you how it had been climbing steadily. Now, in terms of my literature that I've got here open in front of me, is that when that West Texas intermediate prices were above the Brent crude in that 7-day period of May, was as the market had priced in low inventories and low spare capacity in the US. So, once again, you see speculators being involved in this discussion. Because the moment that there is low inventory of a commodity, it becomes a scarcity. Meaning there's a scarcity. But if there is also a sort of like an interference in supply, because when people started slapping on sanctions on Russia, the rest of the world was saying, whoa, 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 whoa. You're going to impact our industries, meaning we're going to have cost of living issues. We're going to have diminishing purchasing power for our consumer price index, measurements or exercises. What's going on here? And it's exactly the kind of notion, the kind of news that speculators love. Now, at the beginning of the introduction, at the beginning of today's show, at the introduction, I indicated to you that the EU guys had met yesterday and today somewhere, you know, and they wanted to find a way of placing embargoes on Russian commodity exports. An embargo. Now, here's the worst part, guys. Here's the worst part. Their political moves are impacting international energy moves or international energy price moves. Their political moves are impacting international energy price moves. Don't look at our Ministry of Mines and Energy. You know, they are a customer. They are a client. They are a customer of someone. They are a consumer, representing us, the Namibian consumers. And the dumb side is, and I'll use this term, the dumb side, because the dumb side is it's not us that are slapping on embargoes or sanctions. It's not us. It's not us. Africa, most of the African countries still practice the non-alignment strategy. We still do. Even though they've been, the Western leaders have been going on roadshows, road trips, public, what do we call those things that we have here in the country? Public participation meetings. They've been going on international and bilateral participation meetings to drum up support for their war efforts, for their economic sanctions, for their impacts, to stay relevant. I say to stay relevant. Remember, guys, we as a continent here in Africa, we are sitting with all the cards in terms of possessing the youngest workforces, the youngest sort of like, or the continent that has the growest or most exponential expansion in terms of the mobile phone market, the continent that has the largest uptake in terms of internet products and internet services, the continent that also poses the biggest kind of potential for the youngest workforce, for example, like what the main attraction actually that our government is constantly engaging in terms of getting investors to invest in Namibia. We sit with all those benefits and all those pluses, even Namibia itself. We sit with all those pluses. Actually, our youth unemployment drive coming from a lot of the opposition and even the ruling party parties, all of them are actually in a way, what do they call it? Not, I almost said promoting, but actually providing exposure that there's a willing workforce. There's a willing labor market. There's a dormant labor market being presented to whoever wants to invest in Namibia externally. If you are internally, meaning you're a big business player in the country, you would already know about it. You would already know about it. Now, here's the thing, guys. The major move in terms of the oil price, and that's now for Brent crude and the WTI, the West Texas Intermediate price moves, had only reached the maximum of just past 130. Now, Brent crude almost touched the 130 mark. West Texas exceeded the 130 US dollar mark per barrel. Now, remember, we don't have to worry about West Texas, but West Texas is attributed within any kinds of energy discussions taking place globally because it's the US. And the US is one of the major financial markets internationally for energy trading. And unfortunately, it impacts all other markets internationally, even here to us. Now, we've got to understand, guys, low inventories, low spare capacity is the exact kind of positive news that market analysts and market speculators love. Now, I'm not going to go in there because I'm no expert with regards to trading analysis and whatever. I'm not there. I'm standing outside showing you the human behavior aspect. Now, these Brent crude prices, remember, are expected to average at about 107 US dollars per barrel by the second quarter, meaning by end of June next month, and by 103 US dollars into the second half of this year, meaning the moment we hit July or mid, end of September? End of September, beginning October, it should come back down to 100. and three. But that's the expectation. That is the expectation. It's not to say it's for sure or it is a done deal that it will reach 103. No, it's not cast in stone. It's not Moses walking down the mountain with the two tablets of all the Ten Commandments for the Jews. No, it's not cast in stone. A lot of things can happen in between. I say a lot. Here we've got China busy flying, you know, doing scare tactics to Taiwan. They're in the Pacific Ocean region, which might potentially once again put everyone around the world on high alert. Because simultaneously, as I said, Joe Biden had been flying all across the world in his bilateral participation meetings with various heads of state. They drew up a strategic, strategic meeting last week that included India, which is one of China's biggest traders, trading partners. Even though India and China traditionally have some sort of a, I'd say a hot-cold relationship. I'd call it a seriously hot-cold relationship. The last time that relationship reached reached a boiling point was 2020. With a little, the small clashes, the little understanding that they had on the border area between China and India. It was a week long or 2 week long misunderstanding. I will call it a misunderstanding, because traditionally they have had a war. Yes, guys, they did. Those two neighbors did fight each other with regards to territorial disputes, border dispute. They did. It's actually a known thing, and actually always a reoccurring thing if you had to look at territorial disputes when one or two countries or neighbors become newly independent from a colonizer, from a foreign colonizing entity or country, then there will always be some sort of a border dispute. So India and China, they've had their differences. They still trade with each other every day. Ultimately, the scenario with regards to that geopolitical situation does point to, firstly, India slightly being more warmer to their relations with Russia, but still keeping a very frosty scenario with China. But they still trade every day with each other. They have business flowing, you know, back and forth from each other. And then just last week, Narendra Modi meets up or entertains a bilateral, they call it the Quad. They called it the Quad now because Australia was there. There was a fourth guy. I just can't remember who the country was, but there was a fourth country there with Biden. Now, ultimately, that stokes more, even more fears internationally. Guys, the only thing we've got to worry about is the oil price. Because if you see careless, and I call it careless strategies, because it is truly careless. If you see careless maneuvering in terms of international relations taking place, for example, like what the US is doing alongside Australia, they do not care about the oil price impacting us. They do not care. They say they do care, but they do not care, because most of the international relations is based upon what? Establishing some sort of a Cold War front with whoever, and traditionally it is always China or Russia. They do not care.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na.
Now we come back from that brief break and heading into some more discussion points. Now, guys, I know tonight's discussion will sound like one major sort of like international relations discussion point, but this is ultimately what it's based upon. It's the bare bones truth. Not just facts, but the bare bones truth, because the facts are in the literature review I have open up in front of me. So, what also has further spurred on some of these fluctuating moves with regards to the pricing is that lower refining capacity in the United States and other countries that are also oil producers have kept gasoline and other oil product prices high. So you now see decreased productivity, especially in the refining sector, is what is keeping the prices high. Now, if you have to think to yourself, the moment you keep especially refining processes to a minimum, does that mean that there's someone in charge of pricing saying, let's keep it at that because we're reaping the benefits in terms of high energy pricing or high fuel pricing? Could be not. But ultimately still, if you hear lower refining capacity, but they have strategic oil reserves. Now, on the other hand, also gas shortages, you know, the LNG, liquid natural gas, and higher gas prices have also made burning diesel for power production more cost effective than burning gas, which has also led to an increase in diesel demand, according to various market analysts. Now, new capacities, mainly in China, are expected to be operational in 2023, which is too far because we're still in 2022. And this could provide some form of relief internationally. For sure. But I also echo the same kind of sentiment here on the continent. You need to hedge some form of a discussion point because, well, let's look at the scenario. We are dependent upon other guys to impact the price maneuvering, the fuel price maneuverings, the oil price maneuverings. Now, refining capacity has also been constrained due to conversions to import terminals and the disposals of outdated infrastructure that was not able to produce compliant fuels in various countries. This points to the UK and the US having to visit OPEC producers like Saudi Arabia, to ask them for some sort of, you know, personalized kind of trading agreement. Remember, guys, Saudi Arabia benefits in this accord because somewhere, some sort of deal was struck. Now, Saudi Arabia is one of the OPEC Plus members. Understand that. They are not as big in terms of production, as big as Russia. They're not. Now, ultimately, Russia is the only sort of like blacklisted member on the group, you know, in that WhatsApp group, because they're the only one that seems to be ignored, but it's not entirely ignored because Russia is one of the guys setting pricing. Remember, they are setting prices. If you're in that group, you are one of the guys setting prices. Now, let's understand also that closure and downsizing that took place in the US refinery market following the pandemic's breakout there is also some of the contributing factors. Because the lower refining capacity in the US especially is linked directly in to some of the closures of their refining capacities. It is one of the reasons. It is not ultimately the main reason, but it's one of the reasons. Because remember, they are still the invisible guys known as the speculators in between. Now, American refineries also have not invested in the same space in expanding their existing capacities because this is just shortly after the, you know, they sort of like getting back to life, the economy trying to get back to life after the extended lockdowns that they've had, the extended closures, especially, you know, with their states being closed between each other. So they themselves have had to be very conservative in their production means as well. And they also haven't acquired any of the idle plants that have closed down, you know, because of the pandemic itself. And these could have also been used or being placed into use or being placed into becoming useful or productive and being allowed to reopen. Because currently, here's the weird thing, guys. Most of these energy companies have recorded record profits. What do I mean by that? Well, you've had Royal Dutch Shell. I don't know if it's still known as Royal Dutch Shell, but let's just call it Shell. Shell announced record profits. BP announced record profits. And these were all in the UK, right? These are all in the UK. Most of the energy companies who are within the fossil fuel business recorded record profits. Record profits. Now, the main discussion taking place now in the UK is to introduce a windfall tax. A windfall tax is something known as if you as a company are writing, achieving, or accumulating record profits within a time where the rest of the country is struggling, you need to be sort of like penalized or punished for said extravagant profit, profit accumulation. But we have to understand that is a political move being considered there in the UK. There are some people who, because they've aligned themselves or structured themselves along the following political strands, which is either conservative, either socialist, or either completely right-wing. You have to understand the UK, they're not like in the US where you only have two parties. They have also a multi-party system, but the two main guys is their Conservative Party and then their Labour Party. Now, they've got proponents and discussions happening there in the UK that could potentially impact the broader commodity pricing, the broader commodity sentiments. Because windfall taxes, in some cases, in some spheres, is not going to be such a good idea. Because remember, if you're going to take something from a very big company, that big company is going to negotiate with the government and tell them, listen, I will say yes if you allow me this, if you subsidize me here, if you give me some sort of a leeway on this specific aspect that is deemed to be a major hurdle in our business operations. That will happen. So it doesn't actually mean that, something like that will be useful. But ultimately, why I'm mentioning these discussions is because, well, in Europe, they're experiencing energy constraints, concerns, and various kinds of discussion points that are also impacting their people. It's impacting us here with regards to the fuel price, because the fuel price is linked to anything that is being transported on the roads, that ends up in your shop, that ends up in your food basket, that ends up in your house, that has to do with your energy bill, that has to do with your water bill, that has to do with you even, I don't know if it impacts even your bank charges, but it has to, it well, it's the main driver. That'll be for the next 2 months, the main driver for price increasing. Now, I'm coming back now into the Namibian sense. We know this already will dissatisfy specific quadrants or specific quarters of our economy and of our societies. I mention this because the first people to think about is the motorists and the transport operators. Motorists and transport operators. Namibia is a big country, guys. Everywhere you look, Namibia is a big country for 2.5 million people. Now, we need goods and services to move between various urban centers, not just Windhoek, between various urban centers throughout the country. You've got the two largest commuting communities who work in Namibia, Okahanya and Rehoboth. You've got major industrial ecosystems based upon our transport sectors, like our mining sector, that need to rely on a very favorable pricing strategy or very favorable pricing for their fuel consumption. You've got people, for example, like the tourist market and also the normal people transport market that are reliant on these petrol prices, on these fuel prices. The tourism market through the car rental services, that ultimately also impacts them because we are now going into our peak season. And the major anticipation is that more international tourists are to be expected from now, from now into September at least. And then you roll over with into the November, December, January cycle. It sounds like it's still far away, guys, but it's now. It's around the corner from us now. Now, ultimately, this does pose problems. Because we have to look at our scenario in terms of the tourism market. The tourism market is slowly but surely trying to get back on its feet. Slowly but surely, tourists that hire rental cars to travel through the country because Namibia is beautiful, Namibia which it is, this will impact them. A higher petrol price, a higher pump price at our service stations will impact how long a tourist will be able to drive throughout the country. A higher pump price will impact for how long a tourist will stay in our country. For how long they will visit in the far-flung regions of Namibia. And I'm just on the self-driving tourists. The guys that come through to rent a car. And then they want to drive. I'm not even on the guys who will be dependent, like the tour operators who will be dependent on, you know, accumulating maximum tourist capacity in order to tour with them throughout the country. Because you even had those guys that used to tour throughout the SADC region. Everyone gets in, you know, one big bus or one big truck or, you know, those tour trucks. And then they drive through the country. And then into Botswana. And then into Zambia and Zimbabwe. And then they end up in South Africa. So it's like a major package for them to see like five countries or four countries within SADC. Their final destination, their starting point is either in South Africa or either in Namibia. And then from there, they move through the SADC region. Well, I suspect a lot of people will be staying away from Mozambique because of Cabo Delgado is still a problematic area. And although Cabo Delgado is their top, their top to the north of Mozambique, they're isolated up there. But still, if you hear there's some form of a war zone in a country, no tourist wants to go there. No tourist would want to go there. And ultimately, the major factor is the international moves made, especially coming from the likes of Joe Biden, in terms of antagonizing further or setting up various international relations for his bilateral participation meetings and engagements, does pose major threats to us here in Namibia.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 100 Namibian dollars per month, including VAT for prepaid, or 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit na.paratus.africa for more information.
Now, I come back from the where I left off just before the short break, is that we head into that scenario where I indicated to you some of the energy companies in the world that have achieved record revenues just in this, you know, between January and now, 31 May, Big Four, you know, their sales earnings. Now, oil giant Aramco. Saudi Aramco is Saudi Arabia's, you know, they sort of like the state-owned enterprise that sells their oil and so on. Aramco had reported an 82% increase in their net income during this period, beating their analyst forecasts that was set or that was polled. Now, this is also a new quarterly earnings record since its initial public offering. And this was also supported by rising volumes that were sold, improved downstream margins, and also higher crude oil prices. So they're reaping benefits on three aspects. With regards still to the same thing of selling fuel or selling, barrels of oil. So it's downstream margins, meaning from the middlemen to the consumer. Then the amount that they can sell to the middlemen, and then the higher crude oil pricing. So they are making, they've got you can call it a trifecta, you know, a triple impact aspect. You can call it a trifecta because they are reaping a benefit on three fronts. Now that's Saudi Aramco. That's Aramco. Now Aramco's peers in the same regard that I mentioned earlier is British Petroleum and Shell. British Petroleum and Shell have also hit their highest levels in earnings in years. In years, guys. Now this is also despite them having to incur write-downs when they had to exit Russia. They had to leave or exit all Russian operations just like that and get out because of the sanctions. Because of the sanctions. Now I'm just going to share, you know, some very, I won't say nauseating, but it's going to be slightly disappointing to hear these statistics, but I'm going to share it nonetheless. Now Aramco's market capitalization at $3.7 trillion had surpassed Apple. Apple was valued in beginning of May, no, mid-May. Now before that, Apple was valued as the most value was indicated as the most valuable company. The most valuable company in the world, Apple. Saudi Aramco surpassed them because of these fuel price fluctuations. It's not to say it's a form of vanity. No, it's not to say that because I can't apply that emotional projection on the situation. The scenario is beneficial to especially the producers and beneficial, like I said, especially to the speculators, the middlemen in between. Now, since they've been considered as the most valuable company in the world, Aramco also alluded to investing its products or its profits into coal accounts until the end of the year before potentially investing or divesting into boosting its oil output capacity and then moving into shale drilling. Now, we've got to understand, guys, and this is now where I'm getting into the OPEC discussion. We've got to understand that with no major expansion plans on the immediate horizon, the mismatch between demand and supply will widen. Meaning, you can anticipate, you can envisage further price increases in this year. Further. And that this will support higher prices in the short term. Short term is usually 3 months. 3 months. Now, OPEC and its participating non-OPEC member states also decided on 5 May to increase their daily production target by 432,000 barrels per day during June. This is still below demand, which would need an estimated 3 million barrels per day increase. So you can see the mismatch. In order to satisfy demand, they've got to be at the 3 million barrels per day production limit. But they are gradually sort of like saying, okay, we'll owe you, we'll give you a small piece at 432,000. 432,000 is still below a million barrels per day increase. A million barrels per day would have alleviated most of the price fluctuations that we are seeing. But if you are a producer of a natural of a commodity, you would obviously want to reap or rake in the most dollars that you can. The most dollars that you can. Now, I'm not even going to stretch into, our oil finds, because I'm going to tell you now, we are 5 years off. So let's not even try to incorporate wishful thinking. We are only dreaming as now, because we are 5 years off, guys. Just stay with that. Just stay with that idea. Now, the next meeting for the OPEC Plus guys will be held this week, 2nd of June 2022. And it is also expected for production targets to be increased again, but by only the 432,000. Then we've got the EIA, the Energy Information Administration. Now, they estimate themselves that the demand will remain elevated until end of this year, and that thereafter, heading into 2023, demand is likely to flatten. Meaning, if it flattens, it's going to reach pre-pandemic levels of demand. But we've now seen what happens when an unexpected event like a conflict pops up in between. And who says this conflict will finish by end of December? Who says it will end by end of December? Who says it'll be over and done with and everyone signed a peace treaty or some sort of a negotiation treaty or agreement by December 31st? Who says that? Who has that wishful thinking that this conflict will end by December 31 or 31 December? Who? It is a bold wish. It's a dream. It is a dream. Because just 2 weeks back, Putin was threatening people by telling them, if you are supplying the Ukrainians with more munitions and firepower, you will be targeted. Your supply lines will be targeted. Now, what does that sound like to you guys? What does that sound like? That sounds like an escalation. Potential escalation to said conflict. Potential escalation in global relations. Potential escalation in an expansion and widening of the current situation in terms of higher fuel prices. That means we will not flatten out by 2023. We will not. Guys, and if any of you know a politician, politicians do not forget. They will always use history as a means and as a motivation to get back for whatever happened to them. So that means Putin is not going to forget. He's not going to forget. He's not going to forgive. So that means this conflict is not going to be over and done with in this year. He's not. They are currently now trying to negotiate of allowing the wheat harvests. You remember all the media attention that was about how Egypt will be impacted, Sudan, the other guys in the Mediterranean, because of the farming supply or the agricultural supply and agricultural importance that Russia and Ukraine had. Everyone was first talking about Ukraine, then it's Russia and Ukraine now, because both of them are major wheat producers. So now they're trying to ask, now they're asking Russia, please allow through the harvests, the wheat harvests, or the stockpiling, the wheat stockpiles that Ukraine had accumulated during this period, so that it can be sold internationally. Now, in between there, you see a funny scenario, meaning that this conflict can be a drawn-out one, which it most likely looks like. It most likely looks like it. In between further, Sweden and Finland want to be NATO members, further stoking the cold front that has already erupted. And that was now 3 weeks back, mid-May as well. Finland, who shares a almost 300 or 400 kilometer border with Russia, now wants to be a NATO member. Adding on to that, even Lavrov from Russia, the foreign minister, indicated Russia has no issue with Finland and Sweden joining this strategic pact, but they do have an issue if there are any military installations going to be taking place. And guess what? Who are these military installations structured for? The United States. Now, we constantly see the same recurring picture of antagonism coming through the NATO scenario. I know, guys, that this sounds like a major international relations discussion, but it is crucial for you, me, everyone impacted by these price moves, these fuel price moves. What are the fueling elements, the factors fueling this, fueling the price impacts that we are feeling? You, me, everyone else. Turkey tried to intervene in one other way there in NATO, because Turkey is a NATO member, and Turkey wanted to implement, if we can call it a sort of like a veto scenario. But I think Turkey misunderstood the scenario because this is not the UN. This is NATO. The only person that, as we say in Afrikaans, the only guy that is crying, that is, die enigste koning wat cry, as you call it. Koning wat cry means the only guy that has the loudest voice there is the US. The only guy that has the biggest voice there is the US. The only one of all the NATO members that had the guts to tell the US, whoa, 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 with this whole frosty situation, was the French. But then what happened? The French went into their own election. So then the situation just died down, and we've got these frosty relations happening up there in the Northern Hemisphere. That then ultimately brings us to our next discussion, guys, because demand is forecasted to overshoot production until the fourth quarter, meaning end of December. So demand will still stay high. Production will still stay subdued, because the producers are now rolling. They're rolling in the money. They're rolling in the money. Why would you try to bring down the price for your customers? Why would you? Especially if it's between states, countries buying from each other, or you've got middlemen buying from a country to sell to another country. Why would you bring down the pricing if you're now reaping?
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep.
Dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dis die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dis soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dis die regte ding om te doen. Man up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Now, as that signals the end for tonight's discussion, guys, and we will be heading into another discussion point for tomorrow evening, just let me leave you with this parting thought. Now, as demand will still stay above and well above supply, demand is likely to be supported by a rise in air travel in the Northern Hemisphere. So ultimately, that means that the aviation industry would at least, you know, have some decent activity happening there. Because for them, it'll be our summer season. And also that easing lockdown restrictions are currently coming into play now in China, because China, you know, some of their major financial hubs and urban settings are now busy reopening up after the infection rates have somewhat subsided. I say somewhat subsided. Now, we've also got to understand that lack of refining capacity and reduced exports from Russia are one of the major reasons that have tightened markets and has led to drawdowns in global inventories. Before it, Russia was actually the largest producer. Now you've taken that guy out of the picture. Now most of the pressure is placed on Saudi Arabia, Nigeria. I don't know where Angola in this picture is. I don't know. And the other Gulf states, that being Qatar or UAE, the Emirates, or Kuwait, and also Iraq. Iraq also features in there. Remember, Iraq reported for 2021 their best ever sales year or revenue year in terms of their oil revenues. So at least there, Iraq is also somewhere trying to factor into this global discussion. But we need to understand, inventories for the OECD member states is that there will be drawdowns, meaning depletions, lowering levels. Now, inventory releases could have assisted in keeping Brent crude oil prices fairly stable at the $110 per barrel pricing level in recent weeks, but it didn't take place. Now, ultimately, that brings us up to our discussion point here for this evening on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. And the matriarch has made her appearance with a ringing phone for some reason. I do not. Yeah, she's even trying to defend herself. Let's hear your defense. Let's hear it.
You're just trying to get me fired. What ringing phone? It's not a ringing phone. It's a, what's this guy?
Also? What was it? A Tamagotchi sounding off?
No, it was the alarm for the show.
Okay, so she's got an alarm for the show.
Yeah, with my copper hair.
Okay, the hair is still the thing. But on that note, guys, I'm signing out. She's signing in. Enjoy the rest of your night. Stay tuned as she will be taking on the matriarch and bringing you the matriarchness that she always does. Ness. And on that note, arrivederci, auf Wiedersehen, zaijian,
au revoir.
Au revoir. That one, the French people who don't.
Nashicheke.
What's that?
Yeah. You must blend more with the African side.
Wow.
You
are very fast. Just say Namibia.
You are very fast to go to Europe. You.
I wasn't.
Why?
I
started in Europe. You must learn vernacular.
Man, first, let me just sign
first,
out, man.
First, before you go to sleep at home.
Let me just sign out. Good evening, guys.
Hello, Namibia. Indira pa manatse muyuni wolela pe. Lela pe onkaro ompu woma futiro no kusisa ngoka haguningwa pamkaro gongodi hokata vuru okutuminako omatumaraka goe agehe na ngoka go paipindi no taga dhana no kutuwa mombepo ethimbo ojo tu njoka. Otovuru okuningashike ko lela pe. Otovuru okutura omatumara kagwe mumbepo, torongisa oka epa ko Eagle FM, nenge ka imba, nenge hoka ka lela pei, nenge uture moshifo sho The Villager ni kwao ya wedhapo. Otovuru okuninga omafutiro goe. Otovuru ishe okuturako omatumara kagwe ginima ya yoroka. Ngashi, omatumara kagoru kozi, omatumara kagoma hiyo, omatumara kagoma harero ya mbeko goma varo, na matumara kagwe kwa rukehe, ngoka wahara uteithire oshiwana ashikesho monamibia, okuza owarapo doranda tu, ni siringa itano metumara kehe. Lela pei, oharongo ngini. Konga oka epa ko lela pei, ko Play Store, nenge ko App Store, eto katura kakarekeri mongo dioe. Paturura o akauntae o shari, eto turamo o mausemba goe. Inda kokanja toko eki mariwa, eto turako oshimariwa, to udhitha shoka topurwa uudhithe. Shampa wa mana okuturamo omo usemba hoe, hogora kucha wahara okurungitha ehangano, nenge ovendaini. O Eagle FM nenge o The Villager. Ronge kitha etumaraka joe, eto sindi mpoka pashangwa send, utume. Shampa watumu etumaraka joe, otari turwa ko Eagle FM, imba, lela pay, nenge ko The Villager. Ona ishwe ompito yokuturako irongwa moyoe yokomake. Tumina inimawe ko digital etomalaiti.com notai urikwa menderero. Opo ukare waguda kukarandithi, tudengera nina kono raketa tuimwe mbarinora ndatongoi hamano ndatu ndatu. Nenge kono raketa tuimwe ndatu mbari hetatu 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 ne nonora yeriari. Lala pe yimo nena nena tai adhika ko App Store noko Google Play Store.
Hello, Namibia. Welcome to the world of Lela Pay. Lela Pay is an easy-to-use payment and booking mobile app that allows you to send out classified adverts or messages to your consumers and have them published in real time. What can you do on Lela Pay? Place classified adverts and messages on the Eagle FM app, Imba app, Lela Pay app, and place adverts in the Villager and many more vendors. You can also make payments. One can place messages of any events, including promotion, invitations, birthday wishes, funeral notices, and any announcement you wish to announce on a national level, starting from $3.50 per message. So, how does it work? Download Lela Pay app and open the app. Step 1. Register an account for free and log in to your account. Step 2. Go to your wallet balance and fund your account by filling in the required details. Step 3. Once registered, go to the vendor icons and select a vendor of your choice, Eagle FM or The Villager. Step 4. Schedule your message, type it out, and press send. Step 5. Once sent, your message or advert will shortly get published on the Eagle FM app, Imba app, Lela Pay, or the Villager newspaper. You also have the option to submit artworks for your adverts. Send these to digital at omalaiti.com and they will be published shortly. To be added onto the vendor list, contact us at 081-203-9633 or 083-288-400 or simply email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Lela Pay. Download it today.